Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Rob Tabb to the broadcast. Since 2003, Rob has been the Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Ecolab. Ecolab, with $6 billion in revenues, is the global leader in cleaning, sanitizing, food safety, and infection control products and services. Rob's role includes responsibility for corporate IT strategy, as well as functional responsibility for IT globally. Prior to his time with Ecolab, over a period of 12 years, Rob held CIO positions for Ryder Systems, C&F Transportation, and Nike Incorporated. Prior to this, he spent 8 years with Dun & Bradstreet Software, where he held senior management positions in marketing, business development, and general management. Rob began his career in consulting at Anderson Consulting, now known as Accenture. Rob has a Bachelor of Science degree from Washington and Lee University, and an MBA from Tulane University. He is a CPA, a CMA, and is APICS certified. Rob also currently serves on the board of directors of the Minnesota High Tech Association. I recently caught up with Rob by phone in his St. Paul, Minnesota office, and our conversation covered Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed infrastructure improvements he's made in order to facilitate the virtual workplace of Ecolab around the globe, Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed his efforts to engage the Ecolab business in order to circle the customer, as he refers to it, Principle 5, external partnerships, as we explore the methods he has used in engaging vendors, as well as some other topics. Rob Tabb, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World-Class IT.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to participate.
Wonderful. Well, Rob, as you think back now across your time with Ecolab, which began in late 2003, can you talk a little bit about how you saw the challenge that was ahead of you way back then, where the company was, and how you began to position yourself to take on the challenges of a new company and also for you a new industry?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things that I think was quite a challenge was that we had a pretty good idea strategically what we needed to grow this company and make it successful in a strategic plan. And it included things like achieving economies of scale as we were growing larger and larger, figuring out how to allow the divisions to operate across borders on behalf of customers, to do a better job of onboarding acquisitions.
Yes.
As a part of our growth and so on. And although these strategic objectives were defined, there really was a very significant amount of additional thought that had to go into all of them to make them actionable from an IT perspective.
Okay.
So an early challenge was working with the business team to really add definition to these strategic objectives. And that sort of got you into the space of almost driving business strategy as the IT guy.
Which, yes.
You know, can be a little dangerous, to say the least, and presumptuous. So you had to sort of position it as being an IT planning process, but it in fact involved quite a bit of business planning as well.
Yes.
Driving these things down from the headlines down into the detail.
Yes.
So that was part of it. And then, of course, those objectives implied some fairly significant and complex technology projects, which the company really didn't have a track record of doing.
I see. That's great. It's interesting, as I'm hearing you respond to that question, Rob, it recalls a lot of what we've been hearing in several of our interviews with executives, and the fact that IT in some ways has a unique relationship with each of the business units, perhaps even different from their relationships with each other. And in some ways that, I think, facilitates the driving of strategic planning from IT, which is perhaps even counterintuitive not so long ago. So it's interesting to hear that that was part of what you brought to the table as you embarked upon your time at Ecolab.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about being the new guy in the block is you got a lot more leeway, perhaps. So it was possible to bring in, say, third parties such
yes.
as a Bain or an A.T. Kearney or somebody and have them work with the business to really put additional definition on some of these things.
Yes.
And kind of get away with it. whereas normally the pushback would have been, well, you know, IT has no business driving our business strategy.
Exactly.
But anyway, yeah, I do think if you have the right skills in your organization, and it is possible to have that kind of relationship where you're truly an internal consultative organization.
Yes. I know, Rob, early in your tenure, you began a program which I believe became named Circle the Customer. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what that entailed and also why it was one of the first steps that you took programmatically as you joined Ecolab.
Well, it gets back to the idea of having our independent business units operate in a more collaborative way, not only to accelerate our own growth, but also to put together services and solutions for the customer that no one business unit could have done on their own.
Yes.
I think we had done some analytics that told us that if we could be successful at marketing and selling the products and services that we had within our portfolio to the existing customers who would logically be customers for those things,
yes,
we could triple our business just with that strategy alone, mm-hmm. without even bringing in brand new customers. So there was a huge strategic opportunity. The problem we had was that all of these various different business units, and certainly when you get into the international, not only did you have divisional separation, but you had country separation.
Yes.
They had all built their own infrastructure, their own definition of data, their own definition of customer. And so a preliminary and very important step was to figure out how you were going to allow them to operate cross-divisionally, and also how to aggregate the data so we could get common views, mm-hmm. Both internally and then also generate information to our customers, mm-hmm. that sort of supported the One Ecolab concept.
Interesting. And was that a difficult process early on, getting to some sort of agreement internationally and inserting yourself perhaps and yourself in the IT department in ways in which it had not been previously?
Well, it was certainly a very difficult process, and it continues on today. I mean, we've made a lot of progress, but I think the starting point was let's focus on the area that we have the most control on, which is certainly our own internal information.
Yes.
And here, what was necessary was for us to collaborate to define a customer's structure, their hierarchy, and then agree that we were going to build and store it in one location, mm-hmm. within the company from a systems perspective.
Yes.
And then pay to have all these various different disparate systems roll up through transition into that. So we now can take a Marriott, describe it as a global customer, mm-hmm. that is common to everybody, and
yes.
we can take our sales information and align it with that common definition of the customer.
Yes.
So for the first time, somebody who's in a global role as an account executive can actually see what we're selling to who and from what divisions, and really determine, you know, where are the weak spots, where are we not getting the penetration that it would seem to be indicated in other areas of that customer's environment, and establish reasonable goals and for accelerated growth.
Yes.
So that was the first step. Now the hard part is determining how we can position our services in a holistic way to generate outcomes beyond, let's say, clean floors or mm-hmm. clean dishes or, mm-hmm. in the hospital environment, clean instruments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can we elevate ourselves beyond sort of tactical outcomes to something that is more strategically significant to the customer?
Understood.
And that's ongoing.
Yes. Right. Yes, no, that makes an awful lot of sense. And some of those definitional changes, as you described, it makes an awful lot of sense. How, as you've begun to embark on these exercises, these defining customer needs based on outcomes, I'm curious if there are certain skills within your own team that have had to become more important or play a more prominent role in terms of understanding the business, understanding customer needs, and so forth. Are there, as you've thought about, recruiting or training of existing staff and building skill sets, are there different skills that need to be built today than in years past as a result of some of these putting up such a premium on understanding of the customer?
Well, certainly within the IT zone, as I
Yes.
mentioned earlier, it was historically it was a legacy support organization. I
Yes.
mean, we had let's say 50 different ERP systems
Mm-hmm.
and replication in a lot of areas. And so, what you did is you took a normal size IT group and you fragmented it down into very small islands of expertise.
Understood.
That really didn't allow for a lot of bandwidth in what I would call sort of higher order business analysis, internal consulting capabilities. And so part of what we've had to go through is a transition to build the top of the pyramid with a lot more power and FTE strength than we used to.
I see.
And of course, this is where, first of all, the elimination of some of those systems takes place in the consolidation,
Yes.
which has been an ongoing mantra, if you will, and then also the more intelligent use of third parties to give you a little additional leverage and some
Yes.
financial elbow room
Yes.
to allow you to realign the IT organization. So what we want to do is have a lot of power in the areas of program management, business consulting, process expertise, functional expertise, and architectural prowess. We'll maintain a certain amount of capabilities all the way up and down the stack, but a lot less internally, in the purely technical or more commodity-oriented positions.
Understood. And as you've thought about growing some of those skills, is that something you've trained for, recruited for? Is it some sort of combination of those?
It's all. Certainly, there are people in the organization that have a proclivity or have already a good base of experience that you can grow and expand. And then, of course, we have a different hiring profile for a lot of positions
Yes.
than we did, say, historically.
Understood.
And so, it's been both.
Understood. In the 5+ years now that you've been with the organization, Rob, Ecolab has certainly grown tremendously internationally. And I'm curious, as it's done so, and as now there is a need to enable the organization to operate in a different way, perhaps, than during times when it was primarily domestically focused, I'm wondering what sorts of imperatives this has led to for IT and how you and the organization has thought about its role in facilitating that international growth.
Well, I think one of the things that happened to Ecolab as it grew, and you're right, it's currently roughly a 50-50 company,
Yes.
U.S. domestic and international, and actually growing faster on the international scene, which is probably not unusual for a lot of companies that operate in Asia and so forth today.
Yes.
Part of what happened in that process was the international space was even more fragmented than the domestic. I mean, Europe was being operated in much the same way as you would be, say, in the U.S. if every state had its own divisions, its own infrastructure.
All right.
So it really had no leverage power and very little ability to be agile, to put in new processes and have them sort of percolate on a pan-region basis. And so a big part of the IT challenge was basically to go to standard global applications and begin the rollout, which is what I think a lot of companies are doing with their SAP and other ERP systems, and we're
Yes.
certainly doing. But really it goes beyond that because the way we define product was also fragmented and described it. We had an incredibly complex SKU environment. So we also worked with our RD&E operation to implement a global PLM system. So we could start there with the actual product ideation and commercialization, then support economies of scale, and consistent service delivery to global customers with our ERP system. And then also because we do have such a high service component with so many technicians in the field, we've also deployed an awful lot of mobile technology to really empower them and also ensure consistency and service delivery in the field. So those are all huge IT agendas. To support it, you know, you have to migrate from a fragmented legacy environment to an IT factory that can actually deploy and support global applications, not just from an application perspective, but also an infrastructure perspective.
Yes.
So there's been huge consolidation of data centers, much more power over network configuration, and more outsourcing in order to really get that 24/7 follow-the-sun capability.
Exactly. And actually, I'd love to explore that last area a little bit more. As you've thought about growing your team and your capabilities, and especially doing so globally, what has the mix been like in terms of finding people in the field, finding dedicated Ecolab staff in new geographies that you're growing in versus working with vendors who can support you wherever you happen to be?
Well, I don't know if I can really answer the question with a tremendous amount of precision, but I would just say that, probably in the application space, we had historically used about, 40% third-party capacity,
yes.
60% domestic or internal.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind that a lot of these were in very small groups executing projects differently around the globe. So we not only had an issue of transitioning staff from a skill set base, but also trying to aggregate staff into areas where you could get some critical mass. So we had geographic challenges too.
I see.
And of course, when you have that, there had to be some displacement because people weren't going to move
right.
in some cases. So we did have a situation where we had to sort of gradually move people into centers of excellence and then lean on third parties to, in some cases to backfill
mm-hmm.
some of those positions more efficiently, as well as move from sort of a classic use of contractor boutique companies into
mm-hmm.
larger, more strategic partners. And
yes.
I think that's still an ongoing process. We've certainly made a lot of progress. We have, I would say, I mentioned, I think 40% was outside support.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, God knows, 30 to 40 different companies.
Right.
I would say now 50% of that is with two or three vendors.
Basically.
I see. It's consolidating even more as time goes by.
And the associated economies of scale savings, as you mentioned before, as a result of some of that winnowing down the list of companies you're using, presumably.
Yeah, there's part of that. You know, you get some of it's an offshore rate opportunity.
Sure.
But
yeah.
The other part, frankly, is a multi-year relationship that allows
yeah.
you to get more continuity of staff where you're mm-hmm. not constantly retraining people,
mm-hmm.
Teaching them about Ecolab.
Yes.
Also, I would say more adherence to your system development methodology standards and so forth.
That's great.
Just makes it easier on a number of courses. So.
And actually, if we can explore that topic a little bit more, I'm curious, as you've engaged multi-year contracts with bigger vendors and have them involved in the development of all sorts of different applications or capabilities on your behalf, how have you thought about marrying traditional Ecolab processes with the processes that those companies bring to bear? Have you found that it's necessary to find some sort of meeting in the middle so that there are, for instance, the appropriate touch points and handoff points that are necessary? Or have you been looking for relationships, depending on what sorts of applications or capabilities they're supporting, where they are bringing best in practice process in and perhaps replacing ones that existed previously?
Well, first of all, there's a couple of dimensions to the question, I think, mm-hmm. as I understand it at least. So let me try to attack it on at least two planes. One, from the standpoint of just operational integration with IT.
Yes.
We have embarked on a program to have a common methodology around the phased initiation of our projects,
yes.
What we call the phase gate approach.
Uh-huh.
Not very creative, but it works.
Uh-huh.
And incorporated in that front end phasing and gating process, we put some rigor into that. We're also incorporating some Lean Sigma techniques in the development of the business requirements and the business case and so on, and the measurement metrics. Once our application passes through that phase gate process, it then enters into the design, build, deploy phase.
Mm-hmm.
And here we've embarked on the deployment of a common methodology around the globe called ADM,
mm-hmm.
which supports not only custom development but also package implementation, and as well as has some unique aspects for SAP
mm-hmm.
in our case. And we're training our people on that methodology. The second part of that is we're working with our vendors so they know how to operate in concert with it.
I see.
So that we have a common definition of the touch points, the document artifacts that we intend and need to have, and so forth. And frankly, that's part of the cost of admission if
yes,
you want
I
to
see.
Be a major player.
Yes.
So that's one dimension.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, which I think you were getting into, is you know, importing sort of the expertise of the third parties
yes.
in certain areas.
Yes.
And clearly, for example, in the case of Deloitte, who we're working with now on the SAP, we're using, where we can, both SAP and Deloitte templates
mm-hmm.
For business process. And, of course, using them for process excellence, not just technical excellence.
Yes.
So we're doing that, as I think you should. But it's really only been when we've gotten engaged with some of these larger players that they've really had that capability. In the old days when we were working with the boutiques,
mm-hmm.
it was very much a hit-or-miss proposition.
Understood. Understood. Well, Rob Tabb, thank you so much for taking this time and speaking with us on the Forum on World Class IT.
Well, I was glad to do it. Enjoyed it.
Very good.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our sound editor is Christian Dooley. Our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.